All right, let's try this again. Good morning, everybody. Glad y'all are up and early and came to participate in this morning's talk. So I'll kick it off with some talk about some of the problems that we encounter in the tropics. A lot of my farmers, my stakeholder base, are smallholder producers. They're either completely limited resourced or low external input resource. So we don't have a lot of the same external support systems like a lot of the traditional grazing forage based management systems that you would see in the United States have. So we have to look for some alternative ways of dealing with some common problems that we all share across our grazing land systems. And so that's a little bit of the background. We have a fairly large small ruminant industry, of course, relative to our island size, and this extends into Puerto Rico and many other islands, and of course all throughout Central and South America and globally around the what we call the pan-tropical world. And some of those problems, of course, as you all know, are lower quality or less fertile soils, which results in lower quality pasture systems and grass varieties, and we can do some things to improve those. What that leads to with the hot, humid conditions, of course, throughout the year is some lighter carcass characteristics, older slaughter weights, and decreased carcass quality. So things that we can do to improve that for our farmers are going to be very beneficial to their survivability and sustainability. So our tropical pastures tend to be Panicum maximum based or driven, guinea grass driven. However, when those systems fail, we have a fairly high rate of invasion by much lower quality pasture species, whether they be herbaceous, broadleaf, trees and shrubs or other grasses. And a lot of times we have situations with overgrazing. We have a very high extended dry season. Drought is not a question of if, it's a question of when and for how long. And so management of that with some species that are selected for, some forage species that are selected for, that can help mitigate those concerns are of importance to us. And then, of course, when we do have full invasion of our pastures and our pasture systems, the resulting reestablishment of an improved variety is quite intensive. It requires many passes with a tractor. Often we do not have the opportunities to use herbicides, and nor do a lot of our producers even consider that as an option. So tillage is the option for removal of weeds, and that can be quite costly, and a lot of our farmers don't have access to that type of resource. One of the major pasture invaders is hurricane grass, or Bothria chloa pertussa. It is pantropical. It is a common problem in the United States, in the southeast, in particular Florida, to a certain degree, throughout the Caribbean, as far away as Australia. It originates from Africa, but it has been spread around the world. It is very low quality. It can be okay to moderate with substantial or adequate fertilization, but like I was saying earlier, that fertilization option just isn't there for a lot of our stakeholders. It has very low yield, and once it's established, it is there, unless it is physically removed or chemically exterminated. We've also been doing a lot of work with sun hemp, Crotalaria juncea. Much of my work was crossover forage agronomy work that went into cover crop work. This is an example of a cover crop that has gone into a forage grazing potential. Sun hemp is a legume. It has many, many, many different cultivars within Crotalaria juncea. There are also many, many other family members. Most of y'all, I'm sure, are familiar with showy Crotalaria or Crotalaria spectabilis. This is the toxic family member. There are other components that have alkaloidal toxicity issues within them. However, Tropic Sun has been developed specifically to not contain those alkaloids and therefore is safe to graze it. I've been working with it as a forage for about 4 years, and I've used it as a dried hay system, fed it old, young, and I have yet to have any problems with it, although that concern is still out there and it must be considered because a lot of our sun hemp varieties that are for sale as seed in the United States are indeed not labeled and may come from sources where there is contaminated seed with other varieties that could have toxicity. So relying on a good, respected seed provider at this stage in the game is important. It is very excellent at nitrogen fixation and nodulates rapidly, and we inoculate it with cowpea and lab type rhizobium. So our project criteria is following much along the guidelines of what I was talking about earlier in regards to tailoring needs of our particular problem to our stakeholders. We want to reduce the possibility or the time frame of establishment. We want to look for options outside of traditional, like I said, full reestablishment of our pastures and seeing what we can do for short-term pasture improvement within our hurricane grass invaded pastures. And so to do that, we looked at determining if planting sun hemp using a zero tillage approach is a viable form of pasture improvement, and then, of course, what those impacts would be on lamb performance and pasture quality. The big question, of course, wasn't whether it would improve the quality, in my mind, of the pasture. It was a question of how successful would this method be at establishment. The hurricane grass is extremely dense, stoloniferous, sod base, and rapidly regrows and is incredibly dominant. So finding a seed that could be interseeded or overseeded was really the critical component of this research for me. We were lucky enough to get a no-till drill that works excellent in our tropical conditions. We have heavy clay soils. I know the soils of Florida are extremely sandy. We have this exact same model at this for the sandy soils in Live Oak, Florida. And so there's and it works excellent for doing no-till sun hemp there. So there's some definite overarching possibilities for extended use. So we, as that picture earlier picture showed, we basically just mowed the hurricane grass as low as we could get it. That isn't real standard for how we would manage a good quality pasture, but for the hurricane pasture, that became fairly critical. And so we got that thatch gone. We allowed the thatch to decompose, and we timed it so that we were going to plant, or we were going to allow the hurricane grass surface residues to decompose, hopefully during a period where we had no or little rain, so we wouldn't get a real fast stimulation of hurricane regrowth. Improved pasture establishment went very well for us, and on our first attempt, we did well in my mind. So you can see the level, excuse me, you can see the level of sun hemp that has come up in the field at this point. Sun hemp is stemmy. It does get tall, but it has a very nice leaf to it, as we'll talk about the leaf structure in a little bit, but it did well coming up. This is what our hurricane pasture looked like. Just prior to grazing, you can see that it was still in a vegetative state. In other words, we weren't putting our lambs in on old, heavy thatch. It had been grazed off. It had been allowed to reestablish for a 3 to 4 month period. So we were going back into a hurricane grass pasture scenario at one of the better times for restocking, opposed to one of the poorer times for restocking, just to take away that variability. And so it was a very simple grazing trial, in what is commonly used. It was developed a rotational system where lambs were rotated for a week on either pasture, and then moved to another pasture, to the same pasture within the rotation, and that initial pasture was allowed to rest for 1 week. At each weekly rotation, and in the rotation back to the original pastures after they had rest, all treatments were alternated treatments, rotations within treatment. Therefore, lambs on, say, guinea grass pasture A that went to B would go back to pasture C, and pasture lambs B would go to pasture A. So we had rotations within the treatment and, or by treatment and within treatment as well, to help avoid any variability. Data collection was done on a weekly basis, just standard weekly weight gains, of course. And the main performance factors we were looking at were average daily gain and total weight gain. We did do, of course, forage of, evaluations at day zero prior to stocking, at day 30, 60, and 90 of the 100-day study. And we looked for a number of other parameters within the plant profile as far as tissue analysis, but for this talk, we'll just be focusing on the majors, of course, which is crude protein, TDN, and NDF, to measure forage quality. So grazing, initial grazing after day 30, we had about 1 meter of growth, that was the point at which we wanted to start stocking with our lambs. We didn't want that sun hemp to get up out of their forage range. Although we found out that that really didn't make as much of a difference as I thought it would, because they were really, really nice about bending the sun hemp over and grazing off the top leaves once it got to a higher maturity point just breaking the stems. So I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment as well. So this was our hurricane grass pasture after 30 days. You can see our exclosure in the back. We did put out grazing exclosures. And then at 60 days, you can see the exclosure in that top left photo, and you can see that by 60 days, our sun hemp would have been naturally reaching about 1.5 to 2 meters and had begun flowering, although because of our grazing pressure, we kept it in a more vegetative state at about 1 meter. If you look in that middle picture, that's probably the most telling picture and where I learned the most about sun hemp for this particular grazing trial, and that was that as you denude the stem of leaves, that stem is still green, that stem is still photosynthesizing, and you can strip every leaf off of that stalk and it will regenerate leaves if you allow it to. So we would strip, the sheep would strip every leaf off, and then there directly and within the rotation period of rest, we would have leaf regeneration, and then we would go back and graze those leaves off again. So that actually worked really well, and we increased branching at the top node point where leaves were being removed as well. So we increased leaves vertically, and we also increased leaves horizontally as a response to grazing. 90 days, you can see our pastures are starting to wear. We have a lot of thatch biomass buildup or ungrazed biomass buildup in the hurricane pasture that's very, very low digestibility that the livestock the lambs simply aren't consuming at this point. And then we've got continued regrowth of the stem of the leaves within the stems of the sun hemp on the improved pasture. So lamb performance, moving right into what we found out, and basically we were able to double our performance. Like I said, we have fairly low levels of performance anyway with hair sheep, so for us this was really good. Four kilograms of gain over 100 days is very bad. 8 kilograms of gain over 100 days is considerably better. It's not great, but that adds up a lot for small farmers that may only have 10, 15, or 20 lambs that they are trying to take to market over a shorter period of time. Male, of course, gained more than females, which is standard animal science physiology. And we did, even though I show the interactions, we did not have an interaction effect between treatment and sex in this particular study. However, of course, the native pasture, the improved pasture lambs did indeed outperform the other three subclasses. Forage availability, we saw a peak at that 30-day point. for the native pasture. That peak came at 60 days for our improved pasture. We were able to substantially or double our gains, but the relationship between the improved pasture sun or the sun hemp biomass compared to the overall total forage availability was relatively small. I'll show you some of those numbers in a moment, but we ranged in only having around 300 to 700 kilograms per hectare of total biomass. That's including the stems. And so that was relatively low, but we were able to double our gains. Forage food protein, you can see that our native pasture and our improved pasture lambs were, our forages were relatively the same. However, of course, our legumes were high, which is fairly standard. And then, of course, forage quality followed what you would expect with decreasing over time from that point of maximum high vegetative stance. So conclusions in summary, we did well at sun hemp establishment, which was our main key point. And then we ended up indeed doubling our performance factors for our grazing period. And then, of course, the possible applications. The only thing I'd say on this point is I think it does have ramifications for other parts of the temperate United States and subtropics, potential in bahia grass pasture and native pasture, and, of course, possibly with lower quality or aging Bermuda grass. So thank you all very much. I certainly appreciate y'all's interest in this, and we probably don't have any questions, but I'll be around later. Okay, thank you.
There's time for one or two.
Okay.
And I just want to ask the speakers, when you're asked a question, to repeat it into the mic.
Sure. Certainly.
So you mentioned that.
Yeah.
Sorry. You mentioned that when the lambs grazed the tips that they started on the ranch, do you think that there'd be any advantage of going in at some point and clipping just below the growing point real high and keeping that ranch and going earlier?
Well, we were in there earlier, Mark. Thanks for the question. The question was, he was asking if we could increase branching through mechanical means prior to grazing. I'm sure the plant would respond, and I know it does. It does respond because in cases where we've mowed it, it will branch. If I mow it low, it'll actually start branching closer, of course, to the ground point, growing point. But I don't know. It depends on your grazing management strategies, of course. If you're going to start grazing it early at 6 weeks, I don't know how much of an improvement you're going to make. You know, my view is let nature do the work for you. Because of the fibrous nature of the stem and the way that this responded, it's going to continue to grow with minimal water. So you're going to get those same benefits, I think, through natural grazing. It certainly would. It just depends on if you want to mow it and take that approach. Yes, Jim. For us, yes, that is a possibility. We have the possibility of reseeding in St. Croix at that latitude, Puerto Rico as well, and South Florida. They are growing seed pretty much Orlando or south. Anything north of Orlando, and it becomes an issue of reseeding. That's a wonderful, wonderful thing for the cover crop aspect, but not so much from a reseeding standpoint. But yeah, it definitely has that possibility. You know, my concern is if it's planted in a monoculture under like traditional tillage practices, then it has a big more application. If it's done in, like, say, the hurricane grass, without that knife, that coulter getting in there and opening it up and providing a means for that sprout to emerge without with less competition,